Okay, my name is Dave Robbins. This is my little tale of what life was like early days at Bishop Stainton. And I'm certainly going to recoil in horror when I hear my own voice, which will sound like something between a true Devonian and a pirate when I hear it back. So, I was born in Newton Abbott Hospital, February 22nd, 1958, and yanked back to Bishop Stainton to be able to earn the privilege of being called a Bishop Boy. My mum was Sheila Robbins, and then later in life, as a consequence of that, I was press ganged into the Bishop Stainton pantomimes and tried to avoid the children's theatre, but got dragged in kicking and screaming. My mum and dad brought me up at 37 Fore Street. And my early life with my sister Gaynor, my mum and dad, and my grandfather Sidney Parnell Skinner was a lovely life. I enjoyed it immensely. I didn't know any different. My granddad had served in the First World War, and he got a DCM for work that he did in the trenches. And I know that he was in the Home Guard in Bishop because I've seen the photographs. My early memories of 60s life at home with my mum and dad and my grandfather was that my dad would always get up early, 5 o'clock in the morning, to go and work for Harris Bacon, and that my poor mum and my auntie Peg would have to strip wash my grandfather. And I can remember as a kid poking my nose in and being told to go away as they had to sort him out before they went about their normal business. We had no bathroom back in those days, and we didn't have a bathroom in 37 until I was about 12 years old. So it was tough for my family, but I didn't know any different. I was absolutely football mad as a kid. And my dad took me to see Exeter City in 1966, and they drew with Shrewsbury 0-0. And I still follow Exeter City up until this day. My uncle Mac, back in 66, got me and my dad some tickets to go and watch World Cup at Villa Park. And I saw West Germany, Argentina, and Spain. And I sat next door to Ann Jones. She was the British tennis champion. And I didn't know who she was, but my dad's saying, that's Ann Jones sat beside you. Now I know she was. As kids, I remember playing football in the road opposite 37 and outside the post office. And the kids I can remember kicking a ball around with would have been Dave Cummins, who lived in Clanning Street, Steve Eel, who lived in 52 Fore Street, I think it was, John and Chris Dyer. And Chris would kind of come along. He wasn't that keen on football, and he'd get a bit bored. He'd invariably like climb up a goalpost or set fire to something like that. Chris was a bit of a character, to say the least. We'd have other lads come along. There'd be Mike Knoll from Cockhaven House. He was one of five brothers that lived there. And that was Stephen, Ian, Philip, if I remember rightly. Stephen, Ian, Philip, and Peter. Brian and Alan Furnow, Mike Wybrow, who went on to be a copper in the Met, Andy McDill, Steve Harrington, and then there were bigger lads. The bigger lads would have been John Green, who's sadly not with us anymore, Colin McDill, Andrew Godleyman, and Reg Gill, known back then as Clarence, who lives in the village. And Reg used to do the commentary while we were playing football. I can recall playing football outside the post office when Steve Eel's dad, Harold, would come home from work. And I think Harold worked on the railways. And he would come home on his motorbike. And his wife, who is Doris, would know he's on his way back. And Doris would open the front door of 52 Fore Street. And as a kid, I thought the following was absolutely fantastic. Harold would ride the motorbike up the pavement and in the front door of the house and under the stairs in one foul swoop. And for me as a child, that was marvellous. Driving the motorbike through the front door of the house. So as kids, we lived for football. Parfields, where the school is now, I still call it the new school, but it is the school. That was a football pitch, in inverted commas. It was a bog, a stinging nettle patch. The goalposts were higher than they were wide. And again, going back to Chris Dyer, Chris would get fed up and he'd invariably sit on top of the goalposts because he'd get bored playing football. It was like playing football in the Somme. It was so muddy and sliding tackles, absolutely great fun. So when I'd go home to 37, covered head to foot in mud, because on the way home, we'd find something else to do, like going playing off, doing something else. All the mud would dry on you. And remember, we had no bathroom. So it would be, oh, look at the state of you. Go into the kitchen and you try and get your leg over the sink and scrape the mud off in the sink. I mean, it's just unthinkable now, but that's what we did. And if anybody ever visited who was important in my mum's eyes and asked to use a bathroom, there'd always be an excuse of, well, we're having the bathroom done at the moment. Come and wash your hands downstairs in the kitchen. And I remember eventually realizing as a kid that everybody else had a bathroom. It was the norm. It's what we used to do. The winter of 63, I can remember coming to Bishop Staten Primary School. And in that same year, Devon was covered by a blanket of snow, really, really heavy snow. We had no central heating at 37 4th Street, and we had a 2-bar electric fire, which my dad would only let us put 1 bar on the fire. And it was blimmin' freezing, and you'd go to bed with your clothes on. And nobody knew any different. It was the way it was. So then, all of a sudden, you had to go to school. So there's no playgroup back then. And I was chucked into Miss Hawkins' class, so the Hawkins room that's now at the community centre. And I can clearly remember trying to run out on the first day and Miss Hawkins locking the door behind me. And I can remember crying and just wanted to go home. I didn't want to go to school. That was it. I had enough of that. So Miss Hawkins back then, to me as a kid, she looked like she was about 140. She's probably late 60s, maybe 70, grey hair, nylon overcoat to protect her probably from kids throwing up and spilling things and felt pens and goodness knows what else. Bless her heart, she was a lovely lady. She had an excess of facial hair and she would stamp her homework with a well-tried stamp, or if she wanted to see you, which you means you've done something wrong, a see me. And I can remember the kids at school back in those days, and I can remember them quite well, names just randomly. There was Derek and Susan Hutter, who lived up at Lindridge. The Circum family, they came from Tynmouth. There was Howard Malcolm and Lindsay. Francis Down, who's Les, the village funeral director, and Jill's brother. Peter Lewis. And one family that really stuck in my mind were the Doxy family, and they were David, Peter and Susan. I think they came from Tynmouth. And in later life, I taught Peter's sons to drive articulated lorries. I think the Doxies had a connection with Austria or Germany because the kids, and this is not a joke, the sons with the kids would come to school in Lederhosen, and Susan Doxy, who was a really lovely girl, all the boys fancied Susan, would come to school dressed in like the Austrian national dress, which seemed a bit strange. Other kids would have been Phyllis Aldridge, Leslie Carter, Rebecca Robbins, no relation, she only had one B, Cal Preta and Christina Groves. And I remember Christina Groves had a sooty puppet, and I was so envious of this sooty puppet. Jackie and John Springate. Jackie as a young girl was so beautiful. All the kids were trying to show off to Jackie Springate. John Whitechurch, his dad was a doctor. And then you had the Lamble family from across the road in the farm. You had David, Richard and Robert, Anne, Elizabeth and Caroline. Dave Pitt, a long-term mate of mine, he was a Tynmouth boy, would come to Bishop School. Dave hated Fridays because we'd have a spelling test on a Friday, but we'd also play football. So it was really difficult. Dave was torn. Do I turn up to play football? Shall I go sick because we got a spelling test? Dave Gilbert, Jackie Cross. Jackie Cross was one of the first girls that we ever saw playing football. That was unheard of. And Jackie was allowed to play football with us kids at primary school. Dinner time, at the school was a walk up to the canteen. So the canteen up at Radway Street, we do like a crocodile of kids up past the paper shop, and we go up there for our dinner, all right? You know, everybody calls it lunch now, but back in the day we called it dinner. And we'd go past the paper shop. So the paper shop is opposite the Ring of Bells. And there was a Welsh guy in there. All we knew him as Mr. Jones. And even as a child, I thought this is rather inappropriate. He would say, "You know what you got for dinner today, kids? You got shit and sugar." That's what he used to say. And I was horrified as a kid that this grown-up was swearing. So to us kids, that was dinner time. Lunchtime, you know, we imagined tomatoes and lettuce if we heard the word lunch. The dinner ladies up there, I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was almost like in a prison setting. They were all in a line, doling out the food. And I remember Kath Honey, but you had to call her Mrs. Honey. She lived in Wallace Grove. I remember her like being the boss of the dinner ladies. There was my Auntie Olive, who used to dish me out some extra. Mrs. Henley, who lived down at Coombe Way. I also remember an inspector that used to come called Mrs. Derbyshire. And if Mrs. Derbyshire was turning up, all the dinner ladies, from what I can remember, were on their best behaviour. And the food, I remember, was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous, the food was. And as a kid at primary school, I was a porky little chap for sure. So they were fantastic days. We traipsed back down to the school. So once I'd done with the original class in Miss Hawkins' class, you then physically went up to the stairs into Miss Wilson's class, which was a step up. Miss Wilson, I think she was called Doris Wilson, was a Welsh lady. As a kid, she looked like she was about 100, but I imagine she'd have been in her 40s. She would have now been like a caricature of Edna Everage with horn-rimmed glasses, and she was Welsh, and she had a smoker's cough to match. Quite a hoarse voice. She drove a sky blue Morris 1000 car, but I do remember the kids were her priority. So she taught us up the stairs. She would teach us capacity lessons where you're throwing water from one container to another to try and get a sort of perception of mathematics. And the one thing I do remember is there was a boiler in each classroom, and on the boiler, it was fenced off so you didn't scald yourself. And you get a crate of milk and put it on the top, third pints of milk, and it would be warm to a tepid temperature, and then you'd poke a straw in and have to drink it. And many a kid threw up through drinking this tepid milk. It was absolutely awful. I can recall once having a punch up with Dave Pitt because there was one solitary third pint bottle with a Christmas lid on it where the others had the standard lids. And we went for the bottle together and ended up having a punch up over a third pint bottle of milk. When you went out to play, you'd go out into the playground out the back, and it seemed absolutely massive. We had climbing bars, so when you fell off them, rather than if, you'd hit a tarmac floor. You had no mats, no health and safety. And in later years, they put in a swimming pool. I mean, it sounds grand, but it was just a sort of a structure with about 2 foot of water in it. The toilets were like, I imagine it would be like in Dartmoor, Wormwood Scrubs. The toilet pans had no division between them. And you were sat beside somebody having a conversation with them while you were sat on the loo. And we had Izal toilet paper. So when you folded it over, it was like the rough end of a Stanley knife. No wonder we didn't like going in there and using the Izal toilet paper. And I genuinely think that's why all us Bishop kids turned out to be extremely well-rounded individuals. One of the teachers I had in the school was a lady called Mrs. Chewson. She had two daughters, Pat and Angela. And I can remember Mrs. Chewson asking me to write on the blackboard on this particular day. And I remember we were in what they call the back kitchen, which is a little offshoot of the main Robinson room. And I remember the date. It was the 6th of the 6th, 1966. So I would have been 8 years old. Mrs. White, or Maureen White, that's Elaine's mum, taught us history, and she was lovely. And we also had a young female student teacher called Miss Starkey. So I guess Miss Starkey would have been in her 20s, and all the boys fell in love with Miss Starkey, and we would try to show off to her and try to ingratiate us ourselves, because she was such an attractive girl, and we were like 10 years old showing off. Another lady we had, and we played her up something rotten, was Mrs. Coyle. I do remember she had a son called Harvey, and her husband was a dentist. And Mrs. Coyle, if you're listening now, I do apologise for my behaviour. So the big class was class one. And the headmistress then was Agnes Robinson. And to everybody else, she was known as Fanny Robinson. To us kids, she was a scary individual, a really strong-willed, ruled with a rod of iron. I guess she would have been pushing 70-year-old, so to me that was 160. Hair in a bun, glasses, an immense aura of authority, and the name you will go to see Miss Robinson would frighten you to death. She would live in a house, if you went up 4th Street, just past the top of Bishop's Avenue. She lived on the left with her sister, who I think was called Annie, or Anne, I do believe. On school days, Miss Robinson would leave her bags on the opposite pavement. So if you were a kid going to school, that bag was for you to carry. If you walked past it, because you thought, oh, I can't be bothered to take that, she's not looking, and she looked out her window and you walked past it, she would then call you in and ask you why you walked past her bag. I guess, looking back, she was doing a good job, but my word, she was really, really strict. I did get threatened with a cane once, but I never actually got the cane, but some kids did, across the back of the leg or across the back of the hand. And I think when Miss Robinson retired, I think she was on one of those SAS programs as an interrogator. But I genuinely think she had the kids at heart, but what a strong-willed lady she was. I was taught at the original school, so the school that's the community centre now, by Bill Holmes. And Bill Holmes came along, I think he was Welsh, and he came to the school in my last year. He was pretty relaxed. He let us play football down at Pathfields. And he liked his music, did Bill Holmes. Being a Welshman, why wouldn't he? And he produced a nice Steadford, and he tried to get us kids, I can remember it like it was yesterday, to perform The Sound of Music, which everybody knows is a pretty popular film. And I got a part as one of the Von Trapp kids. And I remember having to sing So Long Farewell with Susan Doxey, who was also one of the Von Trapp kids. And she was one step ahead of me because she already had like an Austrian outfit. So I can remember singing, but even then it must have been like The Sound of Music, like the agricultural version, because we were kids and really didn't know what we were doing. When the 11 plus came along, I can remember distinctly being told on the day that this is not the 11 plus. I was under terrific pressure to pass because I've got some cousins, pretty bright guys that have gone on to be pilots and engineers, and I didn't pass it. And I can remember going home and crying, not for my sake, but for my mum's sake. None of the lads passed the 11 plus in that year. None of them passed at all. Some of the girls did. And that, we didn't know it, but that lays the foundation for your future life. And then I can recall just going back in time before leaving the primary school. As a nine-year-old, we'd be playing outside the post office. And around probably 1967, so I'm about 9 years old, there was a lady in the post office called Mrs. Cowles, Wynne Cowles she was called. And she was quite a fearsome character. And I can recall being mad on lorries, which kind of moulded my future life, that my Auntie Peg and my mum would go and buy me a Matchbox toy. And it was Matchbox by Lesney. That's the name of the company. So they go and buy me a little lorry and you play with that. And I do remember Mrs. Cowles' husband, and this is when I wish I'd listened more as a kid, He was an ex-Royal Navy engineer, and he served on battleships. And as a child, I can remember listening to tales from Mr. Cowles, him telling me how he was soaked in sweat and oil in the engine room of a Royal Navy ship, and thinking that, that those were his final days, and thought they were going to be sunk. And I remember listening to it, but I wish I'd listened more intently. And I do feel quite privileged that I have got the book, Board of Trade logbook, that details Mr. Cowles' service in the Navy, which I think is absolutely wonderful. So Mrs. Cowles had a bit of an influence on me as a kid. She would call me Fred. So delicately placing this, Mrs. Cowles liked a drop of whiskey. So she would, I'd be kicking around outside, she'd say, Fred? Yes, Mrs. Cowles. And she would ask me to go up to the Bishop John de Grandison, which was then called the Commercial, and it's now back called the Old Commercial, and she'd want a bottle of whiskey. So she'd give me, I can remember, like a pound note or a 10 bob note, and say, ask Dot for a bottle of whiskey. And I'd be given a basket with a piece of newspaper, because you shouldn't have nine-year-olds going to buy whiskey. And then Dot would come to the hatch with a fag, Dot being the landlady, with a fag hanging out her mouth, and that you'd press the button on the off license, nobody would come, you'd press it again, and he'd go, wait a minute, hang on a minute, we're busy. And then Dot would come with her fag and give you, is this for Mrs. Cowles? Yeah. She'd give me a bottle of whiskey, give me the change, don't let anybody see it, keep that newspaper over the top of it, and you'd take it back to Mrs. Cowles. So Mrs. Cowles then, as this is as a nine-year-old, she'd say, Fred, yes, Mrs. Cowles, do you want a double diamond? And she'd give me a double diamond, and she'd make me a fry-up. And I was 9 years old, so I thought, oh, I'll have some of that. I'll have some of that. I really would then deliberately be outside the post office waiting for Mrs. Cowles to get me to go up to the pub. And that was my sort of introduction to double diamond and fry-ups. But again, I was only 9 years old. So that basket trick, it carried on in later life. And again, as a kid, I never knew why. You'd have to go down to the chemist to see Mr. Bond, Mr. Stuart Bond. And my mum would say, give Mr. Bond this piece of paper. And I when I went over to the grocer's shop, my mum used to say, oh, get 20 consulate cigarettes and some bananas and a bottle of Camp coffee. But when I went down to the chemist, it was written down for me. So she'd give you a basket and a piece of newspaper, and I would hand Mr. Bond this mysterious piece of paper. As I'm stood there, I can remember the chemist shop was quite dark. There would be rows and rows of Heinz baby food. It would smell of Wright's Kotar soup and Nivea cream. You'd have adverts, which nowadays would be framed upon, of like 3 and 4 year old kids, girls, Miss Pears competition. It was like a beauty competition for kids. And Mr. Bond would give you this mysterious product that he would then place the newspaper over the top of. And as a kid, you didn't know that it was a box of Dr. White's for your mum. That's exactly what it was. So Mr. Bond, in my mind, as time has gone on, in my mind, he was like the village apothecary rather than the chemist.